Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group and proud host of VFE. And today's guest, so I'm upstate in Rochester, right? And you hear about Dr. Pedro Roman all the way down by the city area. You're like, what's going on over there? And you just hear so many great things about the, what I love about Dr. Roman's approach is he is a true systems architect, outlining various elements within the vision, priorities, leading towards organizational transformation, but meaningful that is scaled and systematized. And, you know, three or four different people, Dr. Roman, said, listen, you want to talk about someone with systems or know about systems, you got to go see Pedro. And I was like, oh, okay. So the next thing you know, Dr. Roman and I getting in contact with each other. I was like, listen, I just want to just geek out with you on my podcast around instruction, around systems, organizational change. And Dr. Roman, he happily agreed to come on VFE. And it is an absolute honor to have Dr. Pedro Roman, who is the proud superintendent of High Park Central School District in New York. Just love to have him. He's a part of the ALAS group as well. But again, I purposely brought him on VFE to unpack his strategies around systems transformation, around instruction, and aligning that vision and priorities to realize the work that's needed to change lives for kids. So without further ado, an honor to have Dr. Pedro Roman. Doc, so good to have you on VFE. Now listen, my team on the back end, they're saying, Mike, you got to limit this conversation because we know how you can get with certain guests. So I was already pre-warned about this episode, but Dr. Roman, okay, So good to have you on here.
Dr. Connor, it's truly an honor. I really appreciate this opportunity to share a little bit about my leadership approach to the work. I find this work to be my life's calling, and I'll talk a little bit about that as I talk about the beginning roots of my leadership development. And so I'm just truly honored. The first time we had a conversation, I was like, man, I have to keep talking to this gentleman because he speaks my language. And so it was synergy, yeah, there.
Absolutely. It's like, wait, what is it? You had me at hello, you had me at organizational transformation.
That's so true. That is so
absolutely
true.
Doc, so good to have you on. And again, please just let the world know who you are. Exhibit your expertise here, because what I get to encounter with you on one-on-one conversations, it would be selfish not to put you on VFE. But this is a fun question, Dr. Roman. And okay, and I really want you this to kind of just, this is like the, I always like to say the hair down question to show who you are as an educator, okay, and also the work that's in alignment with it. But most education stakeholders and leaders know you, Dr. Pedro Roman, as a systems level expert. In 18 months, you've done great things in Hyde Park. Also an instructional expert that we're going to unpack. And moreover, to get to move the levels of instruction and organizational systems, you are a relational czar. But for my VFE audience who do not know you, what describes or what song describes your leadership signature in the ecosystem?
So first of all, thank you again for the opportunity to share my perspective with your audience and really my leadership journey. I would characterize my leadership as humble leadership. And what I mean by that is I grew up in a community where opportunities were not always evenly distributed. I grew up in the South Bronx, single parent household. And, I experienced, everything from homelessness to food insecurity. And it was educators who believed in me, that saw the potential in me and invested in me, that transformed my life. Their guidance really provided this deep sense of gratitude and purpose that drives me today. I want to ensure that every single student, regardless of zip code, gender, ability, that they have access and opportunity to high quality instruction, because I want to make sure that this is not about beating the odds. I want to I want to significantly increase the odds so that all
Okay.
students have access and opportunity to thrive. I would say that my leadership is based on that foundation, is servant leadership. My mission is to again serve the needs of our students, our staff, and as you put it, the broader educational ecosystem. I lead by listening, learning, empowering others, building a culture of shared responsibility and collaboration. I want to make sure that I'm building that social capital, and I do that authentically with students, staff, families, fostering a sense of belonging and inclusivity. For me, leadership is not about a title. It's about inspiring others and helping them realize their full potential. And so in order for that to happen, I went to Russell Sage College, and they really, during my doctoral work, they really impressed upon us the systems level thinking and systems level approach. And that is the only way that we can create a system whereby no student is marginalized, where we're building equitable access to resources and supports. And again, at the my core, I strongly believe that we have to create systems where students have access to the resources, education, opportunities, so that they're thriving, regardless of zip code, background, or circumstance.
Absolutely. And Dr. Roman, excellent, excellent answer. What I was doing as you were providing your answer, I was doing a crosswalk, just really high level cursory crosswalk with two distinct buckets that you highlighted that describes you, that should describe every leader, right? Humble leadership and servant leadership. And those direct alignments, right? When I think about humble leadership and servant leadership, key phrases or key words that you are articulating into my audience, wow, those two buckets, you said listening, you said learning, you said empowerment, you said collaboration, you said social capital, alignment around capacity where all stakeholders know, understand, and see the vision. You said inspiring leader or inspiring others. I apologize. When you think about all of those key words and themes that you stated, that really underscores or really holds up humble leadership and servant leadership. I can see why your systems level strategy is accelerated because you put the focus on people, empowering people, inspiring people, social capital around that. That is very intentional in order to accelerate the transformation and change within your learning organization. And that is underpinned by two key words that you made it personal, access and opportunity. Very intentional with that, Dr. Roman. Unbelievable. To my audience, please replay that answer. We use this, Dr. Roman, as an asynchronous professional learning tool for leaders. And this is a first where we say, on the first question, I have a, to replay it back. It's usually around question three or four. I always tell them to go back and specific answers. But yes, this one on the first one, Dr. Roman, you made history in three seasons for PFE, question one. But yes, to my audience, access, opportunity, humble servant leadership, domains, listening, learning, empowerment, selfless, as Dr. Roman said, servant leadership is selfless leadership as well. Dr. Roman, excellent with that. Looking at that, and I want to underpin that phrase social capital because, when we think about systems transformation, when we think about organizational architectural work, it requires this level of building social capital amongst the various stakeholders within your learning organization. But congratulations, because this leads into this, but congratulations, year two, Dr. Roman, as a superintendent of schools in Hyde Park Central School District. Now, you just unpacked your leadership domains around humble leadership and servant leadership as well, right? But what were those lessons learned and essential takeaways from year one that every aspiring leader needs to know, especially around those buckets of servant leadership and humble leadership? And then what advice Now what you know, unpacking all of these critical elements and themes that you talked about in the first question, what would you tell yourself or what advice would you have provided yourself
That's a great
on
question.
July 1, 2023 as a superintendent?
Dr. Kondo, that's a great question and one that I'm often reflecting on. First and foremost, for me, leadership is not about me, it's about we. And together as a community of educators, families, different stakeholders, it takes a collective effort to make sure that we're creating these systems where every student is able to thrive and reach their full potential. And so that's why I invest so much in that social capital, because I want to ensure that there is sustainability in our efforts. And so I firmly believe that that approach will help achieve that mission. And so as I reflect on the journey and growth over the past year and a half, and it really is characterized by growth. I can't do this work alone. And so I've been able to lean on some really strong leaders that have longevity in the superintendency. And mentoring has been one of the resources that I highly encourage any new leader to subscribe to. And I think that, you know, within the first year, part of that, you know, just to highlight, the listening and learning was really important for me, because I really wanted to get a sense from the community. What was the culture like? Challenges? What were the areas of opportunity? And really going about this in a strategic approach, whereby I had similar questions to ask the different stakeholder groups, taking that information, triangulating it, and start to identify what the trends were. My ultimate goal is to align, as you stated before, align the systems, the processes, the resources, and programs. And so that is really...
Dr. Roman, I just got to interject, Dr. Roman. Say that one more time. That was yes, pinpoint to my audience. You know I never do this. That was on point. Can you say that phrase one more time? Because that's so pivotal in this continuous improvement work.
No, absolutely. So part of the work for me was being able to identify those trends and then start to align those systems, so that we align the practices, programs, and processes to ensure that we're leveraging the resources that we have for maximum output. And so again, that work is really rooted in relational, you know, in a relational strategy. Building those connections. In terms of advice, this is really good because I just did my evaluation, my mid-year evaluation, and I love my board, and I think that's another piece too. And we could go off on a tangent on that, but I did my due diligence to study, you know, the board, the governance, the board interactions, you know, and so that's really pivotal. And I'm fortunate to have a board that is extremely supportive, that believes in ensuring that all students have access and opportunity. And so that really helps me to have that support and moving this work forward. But the advice that I would give to myself a year ago would be to continue to be patient and strategic. Patient and strategic, because transformation, as we all know, takes time. But laying a strong foundation and prioritizing the highest impact areas while addressing the challenges in a systematic approach, that is really, that's really the work. And I'll give you a specific example in terms of identifying areas to kind of focus in on, because part of that is how do we create small wins, right, in that process to keep you going, and then making sure that we stay agile and adapt based on continuous learning, listening and learning, right? Because you don't just do that the first year. You got to continue to do that as you go so that you can get that additional input. And if you need to pivot along the way, do so. But specifically, one of the areas that kept popping up was our HR processes and systems, that those were something for me to really look at. It was an opportunity for us to examine. And so with that as a background, that was a really nice entry point to start to identify, okay, so what is it that we need to do to
Great.
improve our HR systems so that we have strategic approach to recruitment, retention, onboarding. And so we did an HR audit. And with that audit, I had somebody external so that there's no bias in that process, someone who's analyzing it from an expertise standpoint and giving us that critical feedback. And so we took that information to now start developing the systems. And it's going to take a 3 to 5 year process, but we have a roadmap for our HR processes. My goal is in the next 5 years to audit the entire system so that we get to a point where we are asking those really hard questions. Why is this process in place? Is it giving us the results that we expect? If not, we need to address that. And so really understanding the system from that standpoint.
That, Dr. Roman, I tell you. Textbook after textbook after textbook after textbook after textbook type answer to my
Appreciate
audience
it.
again. This is another answer you got to unpack. To my VFE audience, we might break a VFE record. This might be a 90-minute, 2-hour conversation the way Dr. Roman is.
Let's go.
I got that. Oh man, but Doc, your answer essentially is a classic answer of how I describe systems thinking, right? Acquiring this diagnostic deep understanding, this acquisition of understanding the workflows, the processes, the systems and structures that you're going to reauthor. And then through that core understanding, i.e., that is underpinned with multiple measures and metrics to deepen that root cause understanding of your system, then you define the systems for innovation and transformation. You just pretty much characterize that in this really step function manner of applying systems thinking with continuous improvement. Moreover, and this is even to my incumbent superintendents as well. The two words around transformation, specifically AC stage of education, and if you're beginning at your superintendency, I would say the same thing to myself: patience and being strategic. Right?
Absolutely.
The
Absolutely.
first word with me, Dr. Roman, thank you. Reflecting, what would be the first thing I would say to myself when I took the role? Patience. Brother, it takes time. I know you want to change the world. It's going
Absolutely.
to take time. And when I look back at myself, I'm like, oh man, this 36-year-old taking the job. My older self, like, no, slow down. You got time. You got time. But you are so right with that, Dr. Roman. And again, I think that this is a missing element, and you highlighted that this is a sub question from your answer. Small wins. John Cotter in his book Leading Change, right? Or no, I'm sorry, John Cotter's book. Is it Leading Change? I believe
It
it's
he
Leading
has
Change.
leading change as
Yeah,
one.
Leading Change. Yes, I believe this. It's the fifth step within his 8-step cycle process, and it says
Six.
celebrate short-term
Six.
wins. Right? Oh, the
The
sixth one, VFE.
sixth.
VFE. Yeah, I got fact checked. The
We're
sixth. I hear you, brother.
here.
I hear you. I hear you. The sixth step is short-term wins. Dr. Roman, please expand on that because I don't think we do that enough.
Yeah. So I'm so glad that you brought up Cotter because he is the one that I actually utilize as a framework whenever we're implementing any kind of change
Amazing.
process. And so just to expand on the short-term wins, I think it's important, right, to help build that momentum, help build that guiding team that you have, and help to kind of increase and keep morale high, right? Because this work is heavy. And so when we're implementing new programs or processes, it's important to go about it in a strategic way, but also within that process, creating that momentum by celebrating those short-term wins, keeping everybody excited about the work, you know, and doing so, like doing so publicly, or finding ways that people appreciate feedback and feel valued in that process. Again, this work is difficult, and so, you know, whatever we can do to keep, you know, people excited, motivated, and again, I think it goes back to creating that sense of urgency, right? Making
Absolutely.
sure that everyone understands, you know, that we need to frame the need for change in a way by connecting it to the challenges and opportunities, and doing so in a way where people understand the sense of urgency, but also the excitement about engaging in this work. And so it's a nice, it's you got to find that balance between, you know, that urgency, but also the excitement that needs to go along with it so that we can roll up our sleeves every day and be excited about the work that we're doing.
Absolutely. And Dr. Roman, that is to my audience as well. Please get that book, John Cotter's work, Leading Change. You're seeing one of the leading strategists in our country applying this in such a systematic way. You can do, I mean, you can do a conceptual or even content crosswalk analysis of Dr. Roman's answer with the specific stages in John Cotter's work. Amazing. Now, I kind of want to go to Michael Tushman's work. And Dr. Roman, I'll tell you about Michael Tushman's work. Lead and Disrupt is another good book that you should read. And he talks about exploitation and exploration. Exploitation, your current state, and exploration continues what you're doing, systems level thinking to explore new trends, to define new systems and program within your learning organization. I want to look at this from just this really linear scope on a level set context with exploitation and exploration. The reason I'm bringing this up, Dr. Roman, is because of the generational students that we have in front of us. Just that our generation beta, i.e., the quantum thinkers, which just welcomed into the world January 1st, 2025. We are matriculating out of the PK-12 continuum in the 25-26 academic year, Generation Z. You're starting to see that tension with Generation Z in the workforce as they're transitioning. I believe that same tension is going to be emulated if we don't change our fossilized or archaic model that we're continuing to underscore, because we're going to have Generation Alpha, the generative natives, and Generation Beta, which are the quantum natives in our school. We can't provide a blockbuster education if they're living platform lives and generative lives in their natural world. So from this exploitation exploration lens, Dr. Roman, what does continuous improvement change management look like in the AC stage of education with this knowledge that Generation Alpha, Generation Beta are bringing in these really divergent learner attributes in our classrooms? But going back to what you're saying, how do we create organizational coherence with programming and systems, but aligned to the learners that we're serving, Generation Alpha, Generation Beta?
Yeah, great question. I want to start off by sharing that when I came on board, one of the things that I appreciated the district focusing on was a portrait of a learner. And so that work had already taken root. The one thing that was not in place was an alignment between the portrait of a learner, and they also went as far as doing a portrait of an employee to align those two. But what was missing was the review and revision of the mission and vision for values, as well as a strategic plan that will support that work. And so,
Absolutely.
as a team, we immediately identified that as a need, and we went full force to ensure that we align the design to be coherent. And so that work took place for 6 to 8 months in my first year. And I felt like that was the work that we needed to do in order for us to actualize the portrait of a learner. And a lot of that has to do with the skills that we want all of our students to acquire. Thinking creatively, being adaptable innovators, responsible citizens, making sure that they have opportunities to be confident learners and critical thinkers. And so those are the things that we want to make sure that are in place. But part of that has to do with making sure that there is a process for continuous school improvement to make sure that we're seeing the outcomes that we want to come out of the inputs that we're putting forward. And so we again, this was a team effort. There was already a structure in place with regards to a data for continuous improvement using Bernhardt's framework. And so that fortunately was in place. The one area that we've identified as an opportunity was a lot of work was being done with analysis of data. There was sort of this sense of analysis paralysis. And as a result, what we did as we reflected on that is now accelerating the impact on the program's processes and procedures,
Right.
and making sure those things now we need to see the change in those areas based on what we're learning. And so the feedback loops, are really critical in our work. And again, just continuing to build on successes, learning from, the areas where there may be gaps, and understanding the why behind that. And then working as a team, to unpack that and make sure that we continue to empower, our educators, empower our students, so that we can move this work forward.
Yeah, I really like how you outline that portrait of a learner, portrait of an employee. But you hit upon, I always say, the two critical words around continuous improvement and change management: alignment and coherence. And very intentional how you're starting to align and cohere the systems and structures, the workflows and the processes that are embedded within your systems as well. Really liked how you outlined the key elements of the 22nd Century Systems Learner Framework that we just designed and released, systems alignment with 22nd Century Learner attributes, and you highlighted with that. Now, Dr. Roman, I'm going to be selfish. I'm going to get linear down to your level of expertise around classroom instruction and instructional leadership because we talked about the high level. Now, I want to show our viewers and listeners. Now, what is that next tier of connectivity for coherence, which is that social capital that you did around classroom instruction with your practitioners and instructional leadership? But I want you used it in the first, you used this phrase, high quality instruction, in your first answer. I want you now, specificity context, define high quality pedagogy and what does this look like in the AC stage learning environment? Two, we talked about systems coherence. I want to talk about now instructional coherence. Dr. Roman, how did you achieve instructional coherence with all classrooms, leadership capacity for this level of instructional improvement within all of your schools in Hyde Park, right? Practitioner development, leader development, leadership development had to be intentional. So what is your organizational strategy to build capital in these specific areas in Hyde Park?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Dr. Connor. I firmly believe that we know that first and foremost, the highest yield, the highest impact in student outcomes is teachers in the classroom, high quality educators in the classroom. And then second to that is principal leadership. And
Absolutely.
so it really is a two-prong approach. It's how do
Absolutely.
we align and provide the necessary professional development so that all students in our system, in all classrooms, have that level of teaching taking place each and every day. And then how do we build the leadership capacity of our administrators? And so with regards to high quality instruction, again, I think building a team that really understands what high quality instruction is, and I'm really grateful that, from our assistant superintendents, our deputy, all the way down to our directors and our teacher leaders in our buildings. We are working toward that as we move forward. But we
Vertical
want to ensure
coherence.
exactly. We want to ensure that, first and foremost, that the instruction that we provide aligns with our portrait of a learner.
Absolutely.
And so we want to make sure that students have access and opportunity to personalize learning. How are we differentiating the instruction to meet the needs of all learners? How do we provide real world learning experiences that are engaging for our students so that the work it's rigorous, but it's also relevant?
Absolutely.
How do we integrate technology, right? How do we ensure that the technology is used as a tool to enhance the learning experience and not replace that human-centered teaching? And then I would say the other areas that we tend to focus on as we're building this is not forgetting, right? So this is after COVID. How do we ensure that we're meeting the social emotional learning needs of students
Absolutely.
while at the
Absolutely.
same time providing culturally responsive practices in that process, in that learning process? And so this is what we're focusing on as we're building the system out, refining, fine-tuning, making the necessary adjustments. And I'm optimistic that we have what it takes to be one of the best institutions, school systems in this country.
Dr. Roman, I don't say this lightly. And anybody that knows me knows it's a wow factor if I'm saying this. But what you have described on this episode, I would send my son to your school district.
Wow. Wow.
And
Thank you.
just the way you're intentionally designing the system, the highest yield you talk about around high quality instructors and principal leadership, the integration of technology, but there's an emphasis on social emotional needs. But Dr. Roman, I think we need to have more because it's becoming politicized. I think that it's being eroded from the education conversation around creating learning environments that is rooted in culturally responsiveness. Dr. Roman, 58% of our students look like you and I.
That's right.
We can't evade intentionally this conversation around having or underscoring culturally responsive environments when majority of our students in public education are Black and brown. And how you intentionally integrate all of that. Now, when I think of high quality instruction, I'm thinking that your teachers have this lens of being culturally responsive in their classrooms, and you're creating a systems level of coherence with that. There needs to be engaging instruction that is rigorous and relevant. These are all from the systems level all the way down to the classroom level. And thank you, Dr. Roman, because there needs to, and to my audience, just purely looking at it from an objective lens, we cannot ignore the conversation around creating culturally responsive learning environments because our student demographics are saying that we have to. So there's nothing political about that. It's just doing the right work for the people that we serve. Going back to Dr. Roman's first answer around servant leadership. Doc, you brought up technology and AI, right? And I want to just expand on that because I think that this is important because there is a global discussion around the future of the world, future of education, and the future of work. Now, when we talk about AI, when we talk about technology, Generation Alpha, Generation Beta, preparing our students for the 22nd century. And Doc, I know this is your episode. I don't want to go in depth with it, but futurists as well as accelerationists are saying that we are forecasted to be in, even though we're 70 years out, we are forecasted to be living in the full 22nd century, roughly between 2030 to 2040. That's why you're seeing a lot of the white papers and research aligned in that 2030, 2040 range. But being an education disruptor, Dr. Roman, what is your vision of the future of education and how can we take steps to meet these new mandates, specifically around technology, specifically around AI within the ecosphere?
Yeah, that's a really good question. As I mentioned before, I wanna make sure that our students have opportunities that are going to prepare them for jobs that are not even in existence today, right? And so really focusing on those skills to be able to, whatever the challenge is, whatever the job market is, they have the necessary skills to thrive in those ecosystems. And so, you know, first and foremost, I want to make sure that, you know, students have choice and agency in this work. Make sure that the rigor and relevance is present. Yeah. And just if we could just pause for a quick second, in New York State, at the state education level, there's a lot of great work that's happening. They are releasing the new graduation measures, which will provide flexible pathways for students. There's more focus on competency-based learning, where students are exhibiting more mastery of skills and not necessarily seat time, which has been focused on the traditional, you know, mode of educating students. And then, the global, you know, readiness, you know, we want to make sure that students have the, as we were just talking about, the cultural competency. So it's not just for our educators, but it's also for our students, so that they are able to compete in the economic job market when they leave it.
Yeah, Dr. Roman, and you know, I can say this officially, I'm a proud New Yorker, right? And I'm proud of what my state, and yes, I'm giving a shout out to New York, because it is absolutely, I'm happy to be here, to be in the midst of this, because New York State is just doing an extraordinary job, in my opinion, this is subjective and objective, leading the nation with regards to the new graduation standards that are being deployed and are going to be underscored within the state. The portrait of a learner that has been outlined by the New York State Department of Education, the regionalization initiative with regards to what transformation can look like as we move forward, this flexible pathways that has, you know, really, we're starting to really release these tightly coupled structures that has historically been a part of the legacy within education. New York is really leading the country, I believe, in a lot of these standards to move towards the 22nd century with that. But what I love about what you said, Dr. Roman, is that we're preparing students for jobs that we don't know about. Dr. Roman, I know you're a research guy, and this is really compelling but profound. But since the pandemic, there has been a 74% increase in AI-related jobs. So now what we learned and what we know, right, what are these AI jobs? 74%, 5 years ago, these jobs didn't exist. And now 74% of new jobs have a level of AI integration. Wow. When you think about the Morgan Stanley study, by 2035, at least 45% of the world would have some type of generative features embedded within their natural life. So when we talk about creating these flexible pathways, we have to start now thinking about exploitation and exploration around traditional pathways, where now we're creating new pathways that focuses on skill development and digital development as well, based off of these new economic trends. But Dr. Roman, brother, last question. Listen, Dr. Roman, I had a few guests call me up afterwards and be like, Mike, This was harder than my superintendent interview. This is the last question. And I don't know if I can do this, and I don't know if I want to do this. Try to hold you to three words with this last question.
Oh, wow.
I know, but look, people are inventive, they're innovative, they're creative. They use the three and then they expand on it. So all, I always tell my guests, take it how it is, Dr. Roman. But what three words do you want today's audience to leave the VFP podcast regarding Unvice? Now, Unvice is the exploited AC version of VUCA. Unvice to my audience, uncertain, volatile, intersectionality, complex, and exponential. BC stage of education, VUCA, AC stage of education, Unvice. So what three words do you want today's audience to leave the VFE podcast with regarding Unvice in the AC stage of education?
I think the first one that comes to mind immediately is adaptability. We have to be agile. We have to embrace change in our educational systems. I would say innovation. Innovation has been strategically embedded in our mission, vision statement in our work as for the portrait of a learner. Just thinking about the complexities and the shifts that need to take place, requires us to think differently, reimagine, as you stated, outdated models, and start thinking about and in alignment with the New York State transformation work that's taken place, design a bold and transformational model for education. And so I think that innovation would be the next word. And then lastly, I would say equity. I would say equity is key so that the services and supports follow the need, and ensuring that every student has access and opportunity regardless of their background, identity, or circumstance.
Absolutely. Adaptability, innovation, and equity. And Dr. Roman, that last word, equity, right? You're gonna find enjoyment out of this. So I recently it was I try to be very, very objective with the word equity to individuals that might polarize the word. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. Do your classroom practitioners differentiate among specific instructional strategies within his or her classroom? They said yes. When your principals are providing coaching and feedback that is rooted in data and they're using different approaches to meet the specific instructional leader's capacity needs to support their teachers, that occurs within your district, right? And he said yes. And I was like, so that is a form of equity because you're providing access and opportunity when teachers are differentiating instruction and using various instructional methods and strategies. That is an equity-driven approach to meet the needs of all. When a leader, a superintendent, assistant superintendent is building instructional capacity with his or her leaders, and they're differentiating among that, they're ensuring that there's that level of equity so it reaches the classroom of the students. So why is equity so contentious? They cursed me out. Dr. Roman, thank you. Adaptability, innovation, and equity. Dr.
No,
Roman,
thank you.
listen, Dr. Roman, I apologize because when we look at the metrics, when we look at student demographics, when we look at approaches and how we try to provide access and opportunity, that's equity.
Right.
I don't get where the polarization is of it. I don't know. But Dr. Roman, if my audience want to reach out to you with specific questions, because this was and a recording that is laced with many goodies. I'm going to replay it back myself and take notes as a
Oh, thank
listener.
you. I'm honored.
Oh yeah, no, this was great, Dr. Roman. How would my audience be able to get in contact with you to expand on anything that you talked about in this episode?
Yeah, absolutely. My email is the best way to contact me, Pedro, Pedro Roman, Roman, at hpcsd.org. That's the best way to reach me.
Thank you, Dr. Roman. And again, super appreciative to for you to take this time to unpack your core knowledge around instruction systems, students, AI, governance. Truly an honor. And I promise you, Dr. Roman, because I got to see this in action. You're a drive away. I'm coming to see you. And we got to expand on this because there are certain things, especially the Carter work. I love to see how you're putting this in your systems with your leadership development. Just absolutely amazing. I want to learn from you, Doc. And so
Thank
appreciative to
you.
have you on here.
I appreciate you. Thank you for the opportunity. Have a great day.
You too, Doc. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great day.